Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast for the Vineyard Church in Campbellsville, Kentucky. If you haven't already, we encourage you to check out our audio archive at vineyardcampbellsville.org. You can also subscribe on iTunes or wherever you like to get podcasts. And now, here's this week's message. Could we just let the kids preach today? That would be great. I want to hear more about VVBS, Vineyard Vacation Bible School, personally. Does everybody have their spiritual ears on? I can tap into my preschool teacher days. Turn them on. Come on. I want to see it. Come on. Good job. Oh my gosh, you guys did it. That's the best. Okay. Well, welcome everybody. My name is Emily Snyder, and I'm part of the preaching team here at the Vineyard. This has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about today, but how many of you all have started school already? Teachers, Cassie, oh, there's lots of hands. Okay, in a few weeks, everybody's hands will be up, but how did it go? How are we feeling? Mimi says great. I like a thumbs up. Okay, good. I told a friend yesterday, I feel like I have my claws dug into summer, and I don't want to let it go. That's how I feel. On that same vein, we are in a summer in the Psalms. Can you guys say that? Summer in the Psalms. Summer in the Psalms. Sermon series. Oh my gosh, there's even more. Summer in the Psalms sermon series. And at the very beginning, Adam gave us this little framework. Can anybody tell me what it is? What's the first one? Order. What's the second one? What's the third one? Reorder. I'm wondering now that you've heard that for 2 weeks, three here in just a minute, is anybody starting to kind of see that in daily life? So Adam used the example of the rock band Oasis. Are we surprised that he used that example? No. So two brothers, they form a super famous rock band, but they hate each other. That's the disorder. So the rock band breaks up. But guess what? They're back. That's the reorder. Ray last week, I wasn't here, but we listened to it in the car. And Ray used the example of Sam and Frodo in Middle Earth. Are we surprised that Ray used an example? No. And then the disorder was Wednesday. Did you mention the reorder? It's Harry Potter, just so you know. Full spectrum. So we've got Adam using music examples, Ray using Middle Earth and pop culture examples. Well, for me, when I need to like kind of help myself or others think through some type of theological framework, I immediately go to nature. I'm not the most outdoorsy person in the world, but I do like it. And I find it helpful to help interpret some of these things. So let me tell you guys, some of you may be thinking, I haven't seen her around in a few weeks. Well, we were gone. My family went on a 9-state, 3,000-mile road trip. We ended up in Maine. Did my car break down on the way? Yes, it did. But we're not going to talk about that. I did already. I'm not over it. We ended up in Maine. And one of the things that I really wanted to do there was some light hiking. Emphasis on light. 3/5 of my family enjoys hiking. 2/5 think it is torture. The real problem here is that those 2/5 are a rotating number, so it's not always the same two people. That's the problem. So I had typed into Google, easiest hikes, Acadia National Park. Please note, I did not say easy. Do we have me now? Okay. So I did not say easy hikes. I don't want somebody's opinion. I want to know the actual easiest hikes there. So that's what we did. We found ourselves on the trail one morning. I had researched this hike. I looked it up. Anybody use AllTrails? I looked it up on AllTrails. It was purported to be easy. That's relative, though, because people will be like, oh, it's a mountain, it's easy on all trails. But this was the one. So we found ourselves there one day, one morning, very easy little 3.5 mile loop. Thank you, because my kids thought that was long, too. I was like, it's not a big deal, it's 3 miles. Here's the thing, though. I'm not going to bore you with all the details of this hike. It was really, really pretty. Oh, right there. Kind of, yeah. It was really, really pretty. But we got to this point where it's like the trail ended. But we were still like halfway around this huge pond. So I thought, well, this is not the end. but where's the trail? And it just became rocks. And I'm not talking like gravel. I'm not talking like, you know, little skipping stones at Green River Lake. These humongous rocks. And I realized, oh, we have to go over those. Okay. So we start kind of picking our way across these rocks. And after the first or second iteration of these rock outcroppings, I realized this is not an anomaly. This is the trail. This was not in the literature. Okay. This was not in my research. I was not prepared, nor were the 2/5. And that's when this little voice said to me, well, that's how disorientation or disorder works. Those are actually the Psalms that we're going to be talking about this morning. So I had some time while I was climbing over these huge rocks to think through Psalms of disorder and disorientation. I even said it to my kids. I was like, look, guys, it's like the Psalms. We started out in order, and now we're in disorder. And I think at least one of my kids was like, I'm going to push you in this pond right now. So I kept my thoughts to myself. I do want to share this before we get started, though. Okay, so here's a list. If you want to take a picture and then read them this week and get really depressed, you should read these Psalms. Psalm 13 is actually going to be our main text today, but there's all kinds. Some of these Psalms are like a personal lament to God, and that's what we're actually going to talk about today. A personal lament to God, accusing God of being forgotten. Has anybody felt forgotten by the Lord before? You don't have to raise your hand. There's also in this collection, like, the community saying, God, you have forgotten us, like as a people. It would be like Vineyard Campbellsville being like, where has the Lord been? Because we haven't moved. And then there's also the flip side. There's individuals and communities saying, we have forgotten God. And how many of you understand that that is its own kind of disorder, isn't it? To come to the realization that you've just been bebopping through your life and have forgotten the Lord. So there's some very repentive, is that a word? Repentative? Repentive? Tentative? Psalms in this list. I do encourage you to read through them, but maybe grab some tissues and a nice quiet day. We'll say that. So the first question that I asked myself as I was going over those rocks was like, how does disorder start? Like, how do we know when we've moved and from order into disorder? Because it's more than just having a bad day. It's more than having a bad week. I was on a Zoom call with a coworker. This was, guys, Zoom. So I was on a Zoom call with a coworker this week, and I was talking, and just out of nowhere from the bottom of the screen, she brings up this amazing, like, cherry pastry thing. And I'm mid-sentence, I say, what is that? And she just looks down at it, and she goes, it's been a hard week. I needed a treat. Well, I would suggest that moving from a season of order to disorder is like times in your life that can't be solved by a little treat. You know what I mean? Can't be solved by a cherry pastry. Maybe if you need one every Friday, you might be in a season of disorientation. Maybe a better definition, though, here's where I landed. Disorder starts when something in our life fails to meet the expectations that we formed during a time of order. Much like me climbing over some unanticipated rocks on a trail that I had not expected when I was orienting myself on all trails to this hike. Does that make sense? Yeah. And I just want to spend a little moment to bring it home, because sometimes when I preach, I just come up with like arbitrary like examples of things that I'm like, eh, this could possibly be. But I know there are stories in this very church, sitting in these black chairs this morning, of disorientation and disorder. And I'm not going to have anybody come up and share. This is not open mic morning, okay? And I'm also not going to call anybody out. That would be weird. But let me share some examples of just some things that personally have been floating around in my head, in my heart, and in my circles, both really, really close circles, and then, you know, far, far away. Disorder could happen when something in your body stops working. Has anyone ever had something in their body stop working? If you're over 40, I'm kidding, raise your hand. I can make that joke because I'm not quite there yet. 3 more months. So something in your body stops working, and maybe up to that point, you've been a pretty healthy person, right? And then all of a sudden, you've got this like diagnosis. You've never been a diagnosis person, but now you got to deal with it. That's disorder. Maybe it's something at work. You know, work can be the cause of great joy and great suffering, right? Maybe you're like facing a job transition that you were not anticipating. Maybe things at work used to be great, and now they're not. Can anybody relate to that? Anybody? Again, you don't have to raise your hand. I will share, I'll get really personal with you. That's been the story of my family for the past year or so. And it's like the longer you're at a job, the more disorienting it can be. Maybe you're experiencing some trouble in your family. I know a few weeks ago we prayed for folks who are like having trouble or really burdened for their adult children. They've kind of just gone their own way or made decisions that maybe weren't the best for them, whatever the case may be. Disorder in family is like, it gets you right here and you carry it with you no matter what happens all throughout your day. And it's one of those things where like, you know, you never think when you're changing a diaper that your baby is going to grow up to be like a drug addict, right? You don't think that. That's not what you're orienting your expectations or your expectations of your child's life to, but like things happen, you know? I think death is the ultimate disorder. Wouldn't you agree? It wasn't supposed to be that way. If we can take the book of Genesis at its word, I think we can. And I'll share very personally. Many of you know that a lot of the public library staff is made up of people in this room right here, Vineyard Campbellsvillians. Is that a word? And we found out just, I think, not even 2 weeks ago that a very dear friend and coworker passed away unexpectedly. Not only a dear friend and coworker, but a single mom. If that doesn't cause you to say, Lord, what are you doing? I don't know what will, you know? Here's some examples. Wow, this feels really heavy in the room. Great, I'm going to read a hard text. Can you go ahead and pull it up, Cody? How long, Lord, will you forget me? Forever? How long will you look the other way? How long must I struggle with anguish in my soul, with sorrow in my heart every day? How long will my enemy have the upper hand? Turn and answer me, O Lord my God. Restore the sparkle
to my eye, or I will die. Don't let my enemies gloat, saying, we have defeated him. Don't let them rejoice at my downfall. And then verse 5, but I trust in your unfailing love. I will rejoice because you have rescued me. I will sing to the Lord because he is good to me. What a psalm. What a prayer. So I can't wait to look at this a little bit more with you this morning. There's four things that really stand out to me in these verses. And that's what we're going to kind of use as like a jumping off point for discussion. There's more than just four remarkable things in this text, but you know, I can't go over them all and stay within a 25-minute limit. So the first one is this. This psalm is very raw, and there's an economy of language. So we're going to talk about that. Number two, the familiarity that the psalmist has with God. We're going to talk about that. Number three is the seeming whiplash between verse 4, don't let my enemies gloat, if you don't look at me, God, I will die, and but I trust. Because that, to me, when I read it, I was like, pick a lane, right? Y'all can laugh. It's okay. Like, we got to keep this light or we're all going to leave depressed. Okay, and then number four is the long-term, or we'll use a smart Bible person word, eschatological implications of this text, which basically just means, why is this hopeful for us now? And why will it continue to be hopeful for us for the future? So, you guys on board? Are we ready? Even if you're not, I'm going to do it anyway. So, here we go. All right, number one, I got to take a drink 1 second. Somebody called this my sippy cup the other day. He'll be in second service. I'm going to call him out. Okay, point number one. The rawness, the honesty, and the economy of language. Here we go. I would say that this psalm doesn't hold anything back. Can you go back up to verse 1? God, will you forget me forever? How long are you going to look the other way? I actually think that this kind of rawness and honesty makes a lot of people in Western Christianity extremely uncomfortable. I think a lot of folks want to sanitize the Bible to make it really appealing to our sensibilities. I think that this is a marketing tactic to try to save souls. Does that make sense? Yeah. But the Psalms of Lament, or Walter Brueggemann even calls this collection of psalms the Psalms of Darkness. They own it. They own it. So the language isn't, God, are you there, God? It's me, Emily, right? It is, no, I'm stating this as a fact. You have forgotten me. And God, my question to you is, how long are you going to do it? How many of you have been so bold in prayer? I find it difficult. Maybe nobody else does but me, but I don't think that's the case. P. Ray touched on this last week. He mentioned toxic positivity. Has anybody heard this phrase? Toxic positivity. If you haven't, then I'm going to give you a quote, and I think you've probably heard it. In the end, everything will be okay. And if it's not okay, it's not what? The end. I think that these psalms say no to that. I think that this collection of psalms actually says, no, sometimes things end and remain not okay. Can anybody think of something in their life that has ended and it's still not okay? It's just not okay. These psalms don't just say that, though. They go even further and they ask God, what are you going to do about it? They cast blame on the Lord. And that feels wrong to me, right? That feels very, very wrong to me. But it's right here in the text. I wonder if anybody feels uncomfortable yet. Ooh, I don't want to talk about this, right? But here's why I think this is important. It's actually possible when you're going through a difficult time to create a mask based on your experience of order or orientation and to fake your way through life. I've done it. It is possible. But I think these Psalms are actually a blessing to our humanity because they allow us to speak our difficult circumstances out loud. They give us the language to do it. And not only that, that act of speaking and saying our difficult circumstances out loud acclimates us to the rocks that we did not expect would ever actually be in our path. I think about a conversation that I had this week with a friend whose spouse has received a very difficult diagnosis. And this person said, "Emily, I've done all the research. I Googled everything. I knew it all in here, but I didn't believe it until the doctor said out loud, 6 months." There's something about naming our reality out loud that is integral to who we are as human beings. And the thing about this, the reason why these Psalms, or one of the reasons why these Psalms are such a gift to us, is because we are not just naming it for our own sake. We're not just naming it to like put it out into the universe. We are naming it to God. Even in his abandonment, he is addressing the Lord. So the question I ask myself is, can I be this raw and honest with God? And the inverse of that question is, how much do you want to give your whole self to him? Because you can choose to stay behind that mask of orientation or order. Nobody is going to stop you. Nobody is going to make you face reality. But doing so will actually withhold parts of your heart, parts of your life and your story that actually need the proximity, the nearness, the love, and the grace of the Lord in that season. So, also, just really quick, the economy of language. This is not a flowery psalm, is it? I almost think of it as like a prayer on the run. The psalmist doesn't have time to flatter God or to even get his theology right. He's just saying, "God, you forgot me. I cannot hold on much longer. I trust you, but you got to come rescue me." And I know when I've been in these seasons, that's about all I can manage, right? When you're trying to keep your head above water, we don't have time to be like, "Oh, Lord, most high, I hope that," no. So God help. God help. That's like all I can do. And if that's you, I need you to know, that's actually okay. It's a good thing. Oh, I gotta hurry. Okay, point number two, familiarity. I want you to think about some friendships in your life. We kind of have circles of friends, right? You have like your fringe friends you see at Kroger and you're like, "Hey," right? That's what I do. Probably nobody else. All the men were like, "It's not what I sound like." You got your fringe friends and then it kind of moves in closer and closer and closer. But then hopefully all of us in the room have like some core friends. Now, Adam talks a lot about his text thread. I too have a text thread. And if that text thread goes silent, it hasn't for 5 years. If that text thread were to go silent, it would indicate to me something is very wrong. You know what I mean? It's the kind of familiarity I think we find in Psalm 13 too. Here's the deal. In order to know what God's absence feels like, it kind of helps to know what his presence feels like too. It's like not hearing from a friend for a whole day that you are used to hearing from multiple times a day. And it's almost as if the psalmist got in his car and went over and said, "Where have you been? You know, what's wrong? What happened? But this psalm actually even goes beyond familiarity. What we see is a faithful dependence on God. You can see it in the verbs. If you skip to slide number two, well, verse three, I don't know what slide number it really is. Verse three, turn to me, God. Answer me. Restore the sparkle to my eye, or I will die. And what this tells me, and this is actually characteristic of a lot of these psalms of disorientation, is the psalmist is imploring God to act on their behalf in ways consistent with how he has shown up for them in the past. I'm going to say that again. The psalmist is imploring God to act on their behalf in ways consistent with how God has interacted with them in the past. Times of disorientation are times when you have to contend with God. And I think it's actually necessary to do it. I think it builds some muscle memory that you would not be able to build otherwise. And I also want to say this, you're not only going to ever face one time of disorientation in your whole life. Would be cool, not going to happen. So for the future you, leaning in to these times now actually builds up some muscle that you can use in the future. All right, point number three. There is a huge pause in this text. Do you guys see it between verses 4 and 5? God, you forgot me. Turn and answer me. I'm about to die. My enemies are about to get the upper hand and you are nowhere to be found. But I trust in your unfailing. I'm going to be honest with you, I don't like that. I just want the psalm to stay consistent, like just everything's bad. But it doesn't do that. Here's the thing, though, and this is what helped me. If we remember that these are not just poems, they're not just psalms, these are prayers addressed to God. And if we remember, obviously prayer is not one-sided, although sometimes it can feel that way. Prayer is a conversation. I think what we have here, instead of whiplash, is a very pregnant pause. I had to look that up to make sure I wasn't just making up that phrase. It's real. It exists. A very pregnant pause. It's a pause that allows for silence, for listening, for receiving from the Lord. And then I've got a quote because I can't even put it any better than how Walter Brueggemann put it. So, after verse 4, the psalmist waits. It's a long wait after this verse. A wait in the darkness of death. A wait in disorientation. A waiting until hell freezes over. There must be such a wait, perhaps even a long one, because there's no other court of appeal. There's no other place to go. One must simply wait here until there is a response. And I'm wondering if that's anybody in here today. Perhaps you have voiced your concerns and displeasure to the Lord. You've said it. You've been raw. You've been honest. And you haven't heard anything in response. Perhaps you're waiting to hear back from him. Has anybody ever been, now listen, I never have been, in one of those like sensory deprivation tanks? Has anybody done that? You can like go to a spa and do that. Okay. I think it sounds like torture. I think it sounds like the worst thing anybody could possibly do. But I actually can't think of anything more disorienting and sensorially and physically and otherwise than like being in this season of waiting on the Lord. But thinking of it in that way actually moves me from feeling like this psalm just gives me a lot of whiplash back, forth, to more of like wonder and appreciation for the scriptures, and here's why. It's not that the psalmist is having erratic mood swings or read an inspirational quote on Instagram and is now all better. That's not what happened. It's really more like we're hearing one end of a two-sided conversation, and I begin to wonder, if I heard verses 1-4, what could the Lord have said to him to elicit the response of verses 5-6, right? Could it really be, for us reading this thousands of years later, we can learn more about the goodness, the kindness, the nearness and mercy of God, even in the pauses in the text? Well, I think this is one of the gifts of this grouping of Psalms for us today. All right, I'm almost finished. There's one more thing to talk about, and this is the hope for the future that I believe these texts give us. Now, you have to kind of follow a trail of logic with me to get there. So wake back up, take a drink of coffee. We're almost done, almost to the end. We got this. Okay, if we really do believe Revelation 21 says this, a new heaven and a new earth, God's gonna bring it. God is gonna make his home among his people. Revelation 21:4 says this, it's like the famous, God is gonna wipe away what? Say it. Every tear from every eye. There will be no more crying, no more weeping, no more mourning, no more grief. If we really are believing that for our lives, and I am, then here's what I think this means. The actions of lament, voicing your fear to the Lord, voicing your frustration to God, crying real tears, experiencing real grief and sorrow and mourning is something that's incredibly sacred. And the reason I think that is because it could be that our life here on earth is the one chance we get to know and love God through tears and crying and mourning and grief, because it is not, the Bible tells us, going to be in our future. So after we had been on that rocky part of the trail for like, felt like an hour. This sweet family came in the opposite direction. And they very kindly stepped aside because at that point Callum was leading the way. He is 4. And so they let us through. And the dad said to me, just so you know, these rocks don't last forever. And then he took me aside and he showed me across the pond where they end. And I was so, I mean, I'd been in my feels anyway, just climbing and thinking about, you know, Psalms of lament. I was so struck by what he said because I think that's part of the function of these psalms for us. They don't only help us name our reality and build familiarity and friendship with God. They help us see the more eternal perspective of the trail that we're on. These times of disorder, I just have to say, they do not last forever. And it might feel like it, but they do not. And so I feel greatly encouraged. And I want to encourage you all too to lean into these seasons instead of trying to run away. Or instead of trying to make a great mask so that nobody knows that anything is wrong, even thinking you could fool yourself. Lean in instead, because there's like real formation, real mercy for each one of us in these times. And thank goodness, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. Like, there's a text in the Bible, just open to the middle. Look at your phone, because you took a picture, right, of the slide that I showed. And just pray these psalms. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you turn your face from me? You don't even have to make it up. All right, band, you can come on up. Come on up.
Thanks again for stopping by the podcast of the Vineyard Church in Campbellsville, Kentucky. If you'd like to keep up with what's happening at the Vineyard, you can follow us on social media. Until next time.